Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are hanging out today with my good man, fellow Ohio resident, fellow dreary weather outside, compadre, Mr. Rick Vanover.
Hey, Brad, how are you? This weather is horrible today.
Yeah.
The Midwest is going to get some ice-snow combination. I didn't get to do it for lunch, but I really wanted like hot and sour soup. You know, like Chinese soup. That would have hit the spot today, but stuck with this.
Yeah, we are approaching very quickly what I like to call potato soup season. We get that nice, thick, creamy potato soup with the weather outside so frightful.
Yeah, the bowl of soup will be delightful.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So how you been? Good holidays and all that?
Yeah, holiday was great. I had a great Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S. I don't think I've spoken to you yet this month, but I'm just off of shoulder surgery. I had I was going into it when we spoke last. Yep. I think and I took the sling off for the show here, you know, don't scare the viewers, but I'm just came actually about an hour ago from physical therapy, so I've got really good mobility coming back. So I'm going to be walking around Las Vegas later this week with the sling on at reInvent, but I can travel, I can do everything, I just can't that arms and I rock the fashionable black sling. So other than that, it's going fine. It's just everything takes me twice as long to do.
Sure. Now. Well, because you've got half the arms.
Exactly.
how long do they expect full recovery to be?
A full recovery is about 6 months.
Whoa.
But the sling is 6 weeks. So okay. And I'm, let's see, what is today? Monday, Wednesday will be 4 of those 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then I'm going to be dealing with physical therapy for a while and probably some weight restrictions on this left arm here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's going good. The pain was real right after that happened.
Sure.
But it's subsided a lot. I'm able to drive again. So, like, all the normal stuff.
I mean, yeah.
My day-to-day has returned. But it was just everyone be careful on your bicycle is my takeaway advice.
You heard it here first, folks. Rick says don't exercise. Just kidding, of course. But so a lot has been happening since since we've talked last. There was 1809, it went out, then it got pulled back, and now it's back out again.
But it's hard to find.
It is hard to find, and candidly, I can't in good faith, and this goes for both server and for Windows 10, by the way. I really can't in good faith recommend anybody install this yet. This has been a cluster on the Microsoft side. They've just had so many issues, and they're still coming out. Paul Thurrott wrote up today, actually, that Windows Media Player does not function correctly in 1809 and won't play certain files that it should. It's just...
I think we got to step a little bit back at this. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, Microsoft's a huge partner here. Yep. I don't want to speak too loud because they're down the floor from us here. But I will say this. The takeaway here is that the cloud model, the cloud cadence, or that cloud delivery model, that really aggressive timing for releases, that is what I'm questioning after all of this.
That's fair.
I know Windows will be fine. They'll get it right.
Yep.
All software has bugs. But I think Microsoft's learned a lot about the cloud cadence as a takeaway. Mm-hmm. Here. And it causes shockwaves through the industry. I mean, for what we do as a partner, that actually really impacts how we release our software, because we can't release something that doesn't have support for Windows 10 or 1809, sure. The server updates. Like, we have to have that platform support. And, you know, Veeam's just one of thousands of partners who should think that way. So I think the real scrutiny is going to be on the cloud cadence for, dare I call it, traditional software.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned from all of this. And, you know, we at Veeam put out this newsletter, and GhostDev kind of hits out that no matter what, you still got to test these things in a test lab, mm-hmm. a test environment. And, you know, Paul's example of the Windows Media Player not functioning as expected, that is a great example, because I would not want to be finding that out, you know, when you and I today go to render this video or something like that afterwards. So the cloud model, that cloud cadence, is something that I think organizations might need to take another look at, how aggressively they embrace something like that. You know, maybe DevOps might take a different look at it. But mainstream IT, I think the safety valves are going to kick up.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't think you're alone. I've had many candid conversations with Microsoft. Actually, when they re-released this, I had a call with some of their higher level people, and you know, they run through the same spiel. And granted, this comes a lot of times. People think like, what, you know, when we're ripping on Microsoft, like it comes from a negative place. It comes from the happiness of my heart. Like the best day is when we don't really have to talk about it. For example, OneDrive. OneDrive has typically worked very well. Skype has been actually, granted, working pretty well. But it's when they screw up at such a scale like this that somebody's got to come down on them. And granted, they are working on this. But the problem, the biggest problem I have, is that if you rewind the clock about 24 months or so, right in the early days of this stuff, they made the exact same promises of, okay, we're going to realign on quality assurance, because they pushed out an update that killed every single webcam with Windows 10. And if you plugged your Kindle in, it killed that, or it would blue screen the OS. Mm. And so I fully agree with you, Rick, that I think that Cloud Cadence has its place in this world, but I don't know if Windows is that place for it.
Well, and Microsoft's not alone here. You know, sure. If we want to start throwing stones and naming names, VMware have had some interesting releases over the years with changes to APIs and how that interacts with different systems. There have been plenty in the storage industry that have had some head-scratcher upgrades.
Right.
That, you know, like, is that a real improvement? You know, like delete the whole array and reset it, all that type of stuff. So There's more than just Microsoft examples out there, but the one thing I'll say is that, without a doubt, Microsoft is the current like common currency, that thread mm-hmm. throughout endpoints, data yep. centers, and the cloud. It has the broadest reach with something like Windows. So there's a certain amplification factor that goes on there.
Absolutely, and you can't ignore the fact that Windows is very much likely the most complex code base on the planet. I mean, it's what, 25 years old or roughly at this point? I mean, it's an ongoing product that works with just about everything. And so
did you ever see the video where somebody took like Windows 3.0 and upgraded it all the way to they went to 3.1, they went to 95, 98, mm-hmm. they went to I guess it would have been XP, and then they had yep. to stop. Did you ever see that video?
Yeah,
that was actually kind of funny.
It's impressive what Microsoft has done with Windows. I mean, it's people always compare it to Mac OS, and I don't know if I necessarily agree that's a great comparison, because Mac OS runs on a finite number of hardware configurations. I bet it's probably in the tens of thousands, where we know that Windows runs on millions of configurations. And so to compare the two products from a servicing standpoint isn't really the same, but, you know, here we are, and Microsoft's trying to ram two updates per year. We'll see how long that stays.
You also have to balance the new stuff with the old stuff. And I remember last time we spoke about Windows Server 2008 R2, which is due to go into life January, mm-hmm. right, of next year. End of life, meaning security updates aren't available, with the asterisk that you can get 3 more years in Azure.
Yep.
So I actually just went through a whole bunch of drills of upgrading. And this is something that most IT pros don't do. You don't do that upgrade button, right?
Yeah.
From one version of Windows to another. You don't do that because it's hard to test, right? I've actually flipped it around and made it easy to test with some Veeam technologies, but I'm actually having trouble getting it all the way through to 2019 from 2008. I'm actually stopping at 2016 because it's hard to get the installation media, but that's another thing. But where I'm going with that is, like, server OSs are a delicate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the lesson learned here is that Cloud Cadence, not everything and everybody's ready for that.
Yep, we could beat the subject to death, but I think, honestly, I really think the bigger takeaway here is to watch what Microsoft does next, right? It's one thing to come out and say we're going to fix this. It's another to acknowledge you have an issue, which is fine. You know, that the best people in the world, or best leaders in the world, in my opinion, are those who can recognize that they are the hindrance and they get out of the way to let other people to succeed. So Microsoft has realized that they have a hindrance problem. Now, the question is, how are they going to react? And what's 2019 going to bring to make sure that we're not having this conversation in 12 months from now?
Well, that, and what will the adoption patterns do? Because
sure.
there could be shockwaves there.
Yep.
I think the bigger thing that, believe it or not, I would be more concerned about are things like the the Server 2019 level apps like SQL and yeah. SharePoint and things like that, because then it really starts being a lot more of a concern. But I haven't heard any issues around that.
Yep, and then other fun Microsoft things that they've had going on this month. If you had a Windows 10 Pro license that was no longer activated, Microsoft had an issue with their activation servers. And then they also had an issue with their two-factor authentication mechanism earlier this week and over a little bit over the weekend, where if you're using their 2FA, it just wasn't responding and you couldn't log in.
I was a victim of the activation.
Were you?
This device we're talking on right now did the little shadow text, you know, please yep. activate Windows. And I'm like, what? You know, I lost my MVP status, but hey, you know, come on. But it turns out it was sorted by a reboot that took care of it. So that was real. And it kind yeah. of, you know, I'd like to say I'm a smart user. Actually, that's kind of a funny story, Brad. So I'll say I'm a smart user, but I kind of play by a little bit by my own rules. And we hired, this was like 2 or 3 years ago, a new, I should say, an additional person in our internal IT. Mm-hmm. And if you work for like a technology company, you get this weird situation where a lot of people are smart users. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, I introduced myself. I said, hi, I'm Rick. I'm rogue, but cooperative. And what I meant by that is, you know, at the time we didn't have Win10 as our desktop standard, but I did it on my own, you know, that yeah. type of stuff. Well, anyways, the smart user in me got a little bit distracted by the activation bit, but I self-solved that problem. So.
Fortunately for Microsoft, they're not as aggressive with the activations like they were back in the Vista days, where it would reboot your machine automatically like every 90 minutes, I think it was.
That would yeah. get in the way. You know, I don't know the real solution to that. I mean, activation needs to happen. Absolutely, I get that. But I would love to see it end up being something a chip driven, like a TPM module. Mm-hmm. That okay, this one's licensed for Windows Server forever. You yeah. know that thing. And then it's just easy. Dare I call it the Macintosh way to do it? But hey.
Well, if you ever feel like getting a migraine, reading Microsoft licensing is a great way to go down that route.
That's right. Yeah. Or bedtime stories for your kids.
Other things that Microsoft are doing, and I'm curious what you use or if you use these things. Rick, do you use any bots in your life?
I had one bot that I was playing with this year, believe it or not. I made a Python script that would interact with Twitter. I was playing with our disaster recovery orchestration product, mm-hmm. and I wanted it to, like, every minute basically tweet that the service is running. And it was checking a website and the corresponding infrastructure that ran it to make sure that this web service was available. And if it was not available, it basically would function like a page where it's like, hey, the service is down. But I just mm-hmm. did it through Twitter. It was straight up a bot.
Yeah.
And then I had the Veeam disaster recovery orchestration actually go in and then tell the bot that, hey, the failover is underway. Please chill
sure.
beans. And then it would automatically just say, hey, the service is back online. That's as botly as I got.
Yeah, the interesting thing, Microsoft, they held an AI event, I believe it was in San Francisco, where they effectively announced that Cortana is going to become the queen of Microsoft bots, where it's going to be essentially a showcase piece of what is capable with a digital AI, be it from bot functionality to voice interactions and all that stuff. And then what they said is, here's your own tools, so you could build a Rickatron bot that has its own voice and does everything that Cortana can do overnight.
Well, I think that Cortana is going to be one of those technologies that organizations are going to need to try again for the first time. Yeah. And if a significant set of capabilities like that come into play, mm-hmm. then that makes sense.
Yep. It'll be just interesting to see, because it was, oh geez, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Microsoft was like up on stage championing these bots, that bots are going to change the world. And They kind of really didn't. They're interesting kind of anecdotes to what's, I believe, the potential to come. And so now we see Cortana be kind of being digested into this manifest of, oh, you can do whatever you want with these things. But I still agree with you here that we have yet to see the true full capability of these things. And BMW actually is one of the leading companies that adopted this platform and built their digital AI in a BMW. So if you get in one, it should have a lot of the same functionality as Cortana, but just this built on Microsoft.
This feels a lot like IoT.
Yeah.
In a sense where IoT is like really cool and amazing, but if you don't have that business case
right,
like drawn end to end that you can latch your business onto,
mm-hmm.
then it is just a science experiment that's costing money. Now you do have to tinker around to find that business case.
Yep.
But it feels a lot like that because if it's not integrated into the business. And this is the hard part because every IoT success or IoT milestone, it cannot necessarily be transported to another company, maybe within an industry, but mm-hmm. not, you know, it's not like I can make my IoT, maybe smart buildings, that might be the only exception yeah. for anybody with facilities. But, you know, bot strategy feels a lot like the adoption specificness or specificity of IoT. That's just, you know, if I had to kind of look at it of a parallel trend in the industry, that's mm-hmm. kind of where I'd go with it.
I almost wonder if it's applicable to kind of what you talked about with your Python script, where you can link it up to uptimes of products, right? So if you're running into an issue, Cortana can just come on and just say, hey, look, hey, Rick, crap's about to go down or whatever, and give you more information audibly rather than waiting for that email to kick off or something like that.
Well, I'd even rather play AI into the mix and say, hey, you're trending close to your average uptime,
sure.
you know, where you historically have had service level issues with critical things. And bot would say, hey, do you want me to, you know, arrange a maintenance window mm-hmm. to sort that out? Okay, that's cool. And maybe we're not there yet, but that's the type of thing that it's kind of like your car.
Yeah.
You know, change your oil every X amount of miles or months.
Yep.
If I could make services in my data center and cloud latch into kind of expected runtime service level. I could say everything's 24/7, but mm-hmm. last time I checked, I'm still doing updates and reboots. But yep. if I could build AI and, you know, bot-driven logic around that type of stuff, now we're talking, you know, now we're talking turkey.
Yeah, which we had a lot of this past couple of days.
Gobble, gobble.
A lot of turkey. Rick, we actually had a question come in from, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. We'll just go with James. James was wondering what type of antivirus you use in your data centers or endpoints.
Oh, good question. I use two different ones. Now, part of this is my own play, and part of this is VMIT play. Remember, rogue, but cooperative. Okay. On the endpoints, we use ESET. And this is the Veeam standard. It's a ISV that specializes mm-hmm. in that. And then in the data center, I actually use Windows Defender. And Windows Defender, partly I do that because it's built in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually pretty good, first of all. Even if you don't do anything except just use it as defaults. Now, ESET is a little bit more relevant for the endpoint strategy because of, like, you could have policies around removable media, which is a lot more common in the endpoint space than it would be in the data center. And generally, if it is in the data center, it's a trusted action, whereas in the endpoint, you can't assume that. So that's how Rick and Veeam do it. And yeah. it's interesting because the Veeam side here, when I say the data center in the rogue but cooperative spirit, my team administers a lab, which is to my team production. We run major demos from it. We're always playing with futures, and we do some partner stuff there. But that's not under the full jurisdiction, partial jurisdiction of corporate IT. And that's just a consequence of us being like a software company.
Yeah.
If I were to walk into the domain controller that I log into, that one probably is running ESET as well, but it probably has a different policy. But for my own kind of scope, my administrative boundary for the data center and server OSs, I use Windows Defender, and then I play ball with the ESET on the endpoint.
Yeah, there you go. Pretty straightforward, not too complicated, easy to understand.
Yeah. You know what else is easy to understand is like finding and I'm going to dish a little bit if that's
Yeah.
okay, is finding a winner. And you know what I mean by winners, like, you know, people you go to like on Twitter or even just, you know, blogs that you like and things like that. So I want to dish a little bit on something that I just put out on Twitter today, and we'll have a blog post probably tomorrow about. But we just opened up nominations for Veeam Vanguards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and the Vanguard program is Veeam's a la MVP, vExpert type of program. And I love this program. That's something that my team administers. But the kind of the cool thing about it is that we like have these interesting cross sections of all types of IT. You know, you get VMware people and Hyper-V people in the room. They actually talk about some of the same problems, believe it or not. You talk to storage people that are traditional storage or software-defined storage people. That's not as unique of a conversation there. But it's just really cool when I mix all these different people together and then the online community stuff we do. But no, if you know anybody that's a big fan of Veeam, go ahead and nominate them for the Vanguard program. You can find more info on that at the Veeam blog, veeam.com/blog.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. That's real good stuff. Well, I was going to say, what else you got going on? But I mean, that's...
I'm going off to reInvent. So that's something I'm doing later today, the Amazon event. It'll be my first time. 45,000 people, Brad.
I know. Amazon is a force to be reckoned with in everything that they do. And AWS is obviously probably, I would say, pretty close to their crowning achievement, right? I mean, it's been incredible what AWS has done for that company.
Well, I actually think their retail operation is not a sad second place either.
Yeah.
You know, you look at like services like Amazon Prime. I mean, nothing competes with that.
I agree.
And like, and you're probably like me. You walk home every day, and your wife's got a pile of boxes this tall with a little swoosh on it because that's what she does, right? And I think they've got incredible. It is a force to be reckoned with. This is where like the auto industry was in the 50s and 60s for the United States, this type of thing. And then, you know, my prediction here is that you're going to see this get, repeated at rest of the world, right? You know, it's going to be great for the U.S., which is, you know, great economy and all, but there are other economies around the world that could really benefit from the retail side. The cloud side actually scaled very well across the world, but you're going to, you know, Amazon Prime UK, if it doesn't exist already or something like that, and all the other major markets around the world, that's going to be the hard part because I have a background in transportation logistics, but trying to get some of those services to, you know, 2-day everywhere, no cost, that might be a little tough in some countries. But I think there's a lot of opportunity, and Amazon's far, far from done. And the retail part of their business, with the exception of Whole Foods, but the online merchant part of their business, I actually think it's hard to find a real competitor to that as it is on scale.
Yeah, well, it's very hard to spin up what they have.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's one of those things where if you buy it from anywhere else online and you don't have 2-day shipping, it's like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
It's become a standard and it's a force.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I'm going there, of course, for the AWS side of things, but I'm going in with an open mind, a lot to learn.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about that next time you're here because I'm going to be curious to see how it is.
Yeah, I'll give you the debrief.
You got anything else for us, Rick, today before we shut her down?
No, nothing going other than just, you know, we're doing our Veeam stuff, man. We're getting ready for a big release. We're getting ready to start to promote Veeam On 2018 or it's 2019 in Miami.
I was going to say it's in Miami this year.
Yeah, and we're going to mix up the format a little bit. We've learned a few things, and I don't want to steal the thunder, but we're gonna like try to reroute ourselves in things that worked. I'll just leave it at that.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Rick, we very much appreciate you stopping by with your the one-armed warrior up there in Columbus, Ohio.
It feels good to get it out of the sling, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So, well, obviously, we appreciate your time, as always, and hope that your shoulder recovers and that you have a good, safe trip out to Las Vegas. And for everybody else, make sure to like and subscribe and all that good stuff to the podcast. And Rick and I will catch you next time, next month. Have yourselves a wonderful, well, December for the most part.